You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new sculpture in downtown Appleton is shaking up the scenery for local residents. Some pleased, others less so. We'll talk with the artist and then look at the role of public art. Right now, it's time for a Wisconsin News Roundup, checking with reporters around the state about the stories they're covering. First, UW La Crosse has released two investigations into Joel Elgin, a former art professor who was accused of sexual harassment while employed at the school. Hope Kerwin is a WPR News reporter based in La Crosse. Hope, thanks for joining us.
Happy to do it.
Can you remind us first how these allegations against this UW La Crosse art professor first came up?
Yeah, so the public first learned about these allegations in a public Facebook post made by a student in September of in 2019. That student had reported Joel Elgin, the former art department chair, to UWL in March and said that the UW officials failed to follow up with her after that report of sexual harassment. And the student just felt that the university had not taken enough action to protect her and other students from, you know, this harasser.
Now we've got results from, as I understand it, two investigations from UW System and UW La Crosse. What kind of conclusions did they release?
Yeah, so we know that UWL conducted a first investigation when this student came forward. And then after the public Facebook post was made in September, UWL asked UW System to come in and do a second investigation. And so UWL this week released the reports, that the summary reports of these two different investigations. And they show a kind of two different stories. On the one hand, the UWL report that first came out, you know, it basically found that there was insufficient evidence to sustain a finding that Joel Elgin had violated university policy. It describes that university officials gave guidance to Elgin on appropriate instructor-student interactions and had directed him not to have contact with the student who reported him. But that was kind of the end of that investigation. By comparison, the UW System report found that Elgin did sexually harass the student who reported him, and based on interviews with three former students and one current student who came forward after the student made that public Facebook post, based on their interviews, the University System investigators also found that Elgin had conducted unacceptable behavior, is how they described it, with several other students.
Is Elgin still at the university?
No, Elgin retired from the university in December, and in a statement from his lawyer said that he chose to retire after university attorneys advised him that some of his retirement benefits were at risk if he chose to kind of face the conclusions of this investigation.
And he, as I understand it, still denies these the allegations against him?
Yes, he does deny any claim of sexual harassment, and you know, has said through his attorney that you know, he feels the UW System investigation was not impartial, that it did not include supportive statements from students and faculty that were given or included much of his testimony, and has basically said that the university caved to pressure from students and from the community.
We have these reports out now. He's left the university. Is that it for this story, or are there more follow-ups you're watching for?
No, there's definitely some dissatisfaction among students and other you know, people in the university community about how this was handled by UWL. And so UWL Chancellor Joe Gao has said that the administration will hold an open forum on February 12th to discuss these two reports and discuss how this case was handled and any other issues that, you know, kind of come out of this report. So this conversation is definitely not over.
Hope, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hope Kerwin is a WPR reporter based in La Crosse. She talked to us about the release of two investigations into a former UW La Crosse professor accused of sexual harassment. Next, when Semco Windows and Doors in Merrill closed on New Year's Eve, it left 140 employees out of work. Now their union is saying the layoff violated the law. Megan Stringer is the Streetwise reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald. Megan, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be here.
What do we know, Megan, about why Semco closed?
So in a letter that the owner, Patrick Sumlane, wrote to both the state and employees, it seems to be a financial issue. He says that there weren't enough orders or cash and could not find a buyer for the company. So that is about all we know about why the company closed.
And from the workers' perspective, they found out with at most about one day's notice. Is that right?
Something like that, depending on the worker, yes. I spoke with three former SEMCO employees who received their letters in the mail on January 2nd. They were dated January 30th, saying the plant would close, December 30th, rather, saying the plant would close December 31st.
Now, the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters is saying that that notice was actually a violation of law. What are they pointing to?
So they point to federal and state laws. On the state level, Wisconsin's business closing and mass layoff law, and on the federal level, the WARN Act. Both in some form or another require 60 days notice for a closure. At the state level, it impacts companies of 50 or more employees, and at the federal level, companies with 100 or more employees. So SEMCO would apply to both of those, the union says.
What is the union seeking then for those laid off employees?
So there are damages for employees under those laws if they are found to be violated, and that is 60 days worth of pay and benefits. In this case, 60 days. It would be, every day pay and benefit that notice was required but not given.
And how does the union plan to go about making that happen?
So their first step is just to reach out to the company. They have not filed a claim with the state or at the federal level. They want to just be able to talk with the owner first and work things out that way if possible. They say that's always the better option.
And has the company itself, the now closed company SEMCO, said anything in response to this argument?
I have not heard back from him. I put in multiple calls and I have not personally received a response.
Megan, thanks a lot for the update.
Thank you.
Megan Stringer is the Streetwise reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald. She talked with us about the abrupt layoff of workers at SEMCO Windows and Doors in Merrill, which a union now says violated the law. Now officials in Port Washington are weighing options for how to repair the city's breakwater after it was damaged in a major winter storm earlier this month. Kristen Halbig-Ziem is the Port Washington reporter for the Ozaukee Press. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
Let's talk about the breakwater in Port Washington. It serves a practical purpose, of course, but I understand when it's seasonable weather, people like to walk out on it, too. It's not just a practical thing here.
That's true. And sometimes they even go out, brave the lake when it's not so seasonable.
Now, let's talk about this storm on January 11th. You and your colleagues had some just crazy pictures of the water and how high it got. Can you talk about the storm and the damage it caused?
Oh, sure. The storm was I guess you would call it almost a typical Lake Michigan gale. I mean, it was pretty incredible. But it was made worse. You know, we've had storms like this before, big winds, big waves. But because the water level is so high, everything was magnified. And the waterfront just took a beating. And our breakwater, for the most part, held up. You know, structurally, it's sound. But the portion that's closest to the shore, portions of it were undermined. A portion of the walkway was washed away, popped out of its supports and popped out. So it was pretty ferocious.
What kind of costs is the city looking at now to try to repair that damage and make the walkway walkable again?
Well, that's unknown at this point. Last week, the Common Council approved spending $14,000. There was about a 10 to a 30-foot portion that was undermined, and they approved spending $14,000 just to fill in that area. They don't yet know what the cost of replacing the portion of walkway that was popped out, what that will be, or the railing that was knocked off.
Now, I've heard from other communities dealing with flood infrastructure damage, often in northern Wisconsin on Lake Superior. Okay, this storm, this flood damaged this, and then are we going to rebuild it just like it was? Or are we going to try to strengthen it for the next storm that's like that? Is that a debate? Is that a question that's going on in Port Washington right now?
Absolutely, and I think it is everywhere. The city is talking, this portion that was undermined, they're using a process and a I believe they called it a concrete slurry, that they've used before, and they said that's held in the past, so that's doing well. But they're also talking about spending perhaps as much as $25,000 to bring in some more armor stones, big giant boulders, to protect that area. They've worked with the Army Corps to shore up the rest of the breakwater in the past, but this area doesn't have the larger stones, so...
And is there a timeline on when whatever the repairs look like are going to happen?
Well, they're hoping to get that undermined area filled in the next couple weeks. They said as soon as the ice goes away, so if we get a number of days that are warm enough, the ice will melt, and they're hoping to get that taken care of immediately. And, of course, they'd like the walkway open for summer.
Chris, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Thank you.
Kristen Halbeck-Zeem is the Port Washington reporter at the Ozaukee Press. She talked to us about damage to the city's breakwater after a big winter storm this month and finished out our Wisconsin News Roundup.